Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, welcome along to the show. Enda here in the company of Jucco James and Alan Morrison. A lot to discuss on today's show. We have the Celtic 3-0 win against Hearts, and we have the small matter of another derby coming up this weekend. So it seems like there's a derby every second weekend at this point in time. This one is an important one. Celtic cannot win the league this week, technically, but they can all but win the league this week if they beat Rangers. So mathematically, it will not be all wrapped up if they beat Rangers on Saturday, but you know, psychologically, I think psychologically it might be done anyway, but I might be getting ahead of myself ahead of the derby. But we're going to be discussing that on today's show as well. James, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Good to see you again.
Yeah, I took a small hiatus. I've taken, like Gary Neville does, I took miniature retirements, Alan, over the last couple of weeks.
Yes, but I suspect you're working very hard on that golf course, and I hope Liam Scales' bag wasn't too heavy for you there.
Maybe that's what I was doing over the last couple of weeks. I was just sorting out that 4-year deal, getting that over the line to the much dismay of a lot of Celtic fans.
It doesn't matter how optimistic you are, by the way, about the weekend, because we will never, ever, ever win the Moral Victory Cup.
it's all about the moral victories. That's what it's all about. It's all about. Right, we do have an actual victory to talk about though, and that's a 3-0 win over Hearts. Celtic peaking at the right time here, let's be honest. Like this is where it really matters. If there's, you know, a small margin of points between Celtic and Rangers, the split post split is when you want Celtic to be properly peaking. And Alan, this was one of the best performances from Celtic probably this season. It's a low bar. I'll take that. It's a low bar. But in terms of key players performing at key times, Kyogo scoring, Cal McGregor playing well, Matt O'Reilly back playing really well, Carter Vickers solid in defence, Hart pulling off some good saves when needed, it's what you want to see coming into the final 4 or 5 games of the season.
Yeah, it was a bit of a sort of sticky first So 20 to 30 minutes, I guess, and they had a couple of very good chances. Hart made a great save. There was a block in the first minute. Hart's played as well as I've ever seen them play, frankly, at Celtic Park. I can remember for that first sort of 20 minutes or so, they got aggressive in front foot with their press, and it worked out for them in terms of, as I say, creating, you know, they had like 5 shots in the first 30 minutes, but then they didn't have another shot until the 76th minutes, and that was the last one that they had. And Celtic, you know, it was quite pleasing the extent to which they took control. And as you said, it was very pleasing that it seemed like most, if not all, the team pretty much look in good nick, both sort of physical and in form as well. I mean, McGregor, he didn't actually contribute a lot with the ball, but off the ball, we had that sort of famous double tackle. He chased back Vargas, who's their quickest player, to be fair, and won the ball back. He did win a remarkable number of tackles in the game. I think 8 was actually second to Taylor, because Taylor, again, had a ton of defensive work to do because he was just being targeted time and time and time again. and actually he did pretty well. It was one of Taylor's better games, I would say. So McGregor, you know, for as much as he was lacking in the ball delivery department, and I think that Hearts, you know, did a decent job of shackling him in that to that extent. He did look like physically fit just by the sheer energy of his performance off the ball and so forth. So that was pleasing. And you know, I think I said in the WhatsApp group that it was noticeable to me that it was the older ones, really. It was the Hart, McGregor, Forrest, Kyogo that really seemed to not step up. That's a bit dramatic, but all put in really solid, good performances when it really mattered and it needed to be done. And that's probably not a coincidence for the more experienced players really sort of recognizing that this is the time in the season when, you know, it's all or nothing. So, and I think, and around that, you know, we saw glimpses of Hatate being back to his best as well. He had the best pass packing scores. It was a kind of classic Hatate. You know, there was a few losing the ball in his own final third, his own defensive third, but also, you know, great pass for Kyogo's goal and a few other nice moments as well. So he looked in good form, and he got another good 70-80 minutes under his belt. So he's looking to be in good shape, which is great. So yeah, all in all, and the bench looked strong. I mean, we brought on Maeda, came back and ran around a lot, as you'd expect. Iwata comes on and generally looks quite composed and unflustered. You know, Ida comes on and, you know, runs channels and, you know, is a bit of a pest up front. And then, you know, Palma and Bernardo, we know, have actually contributed quite a lot this season. So good stuff from the experienced players. Everybody looks in good nick, apart from arguably Nicholas Kuhn. And everyone looks, you know, ready for the big game. So it's lots to be pleased with, I think.
Yeah, there's quite a bit in that, James, because, I mean, the summation of that is pretty much all-encompassing of what happened against Hearts, and so even some of the themes that we're seeing throughout the season. In terms of the general play and how Celtic approached the game, excuse me, I think from the eye test, I don't know if there's any data to back this up, but it was pleasing to see Celtic stretch the game a little bit more, getting in behind the channels and actually putting in some low crosses. Dare I say, Celtic actually looked a little bit more like they were edging towards the get the ball to the end line and pull it back.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this goes back to, I think, partly it's personnel. So, you know, I think it's difficult to understate how much of a difference Forrest has made in addressing that black hole on one wing that we've been dealing with, and oftentimes two holes, relative to that specific facet of play. I mean, he's got the ability to go in both directions and use both feet. And so, you know, whether he's the one actually doing it or not, I mean, it just creates a different stressor on the defensive team. And having to actually respect that. And again, I think we saw with Kuhn the opposite of that. I mean, that it, as I mentioned, I think it was last week, he's looking fairly one-dimensional. He almost always goes left on his left foot. So, without Forrest in that mix, and I think, you know, we'll get into that and talking about that as a selection question as we head into the weekend. But yeah, the other thing, you know, this goes back to, you know, when I run my kind of attribution framework and looking at teams, my framework has not been, complementary of how, Hearts are managed and coached. If you kind of back out Shanklin's finishing this year, they haven't actually been that good of a team. And I think, you know, where those things play out is in tactics, you know, how what's the level of quality and coordination in the press, that kind of thing. So, you know, they came out, and as Al and I have been talking about since January, you know, kind of this hope that we would draw teams into thinking that they could have a go at us on a front foot at Celtic Park. And, you know, Hearts came out and did that. And, you know, to their credit, they did get a couple of chances, the Devlin one being by far the best of the two. Good save by Hart. Not really a great finish by Devlin. The other one was just a kind of a standard Shanklin chance, which is he got the ball central, but there were five guys in his line of sight. Like again, I've done threads on this on Twitter. I mean, his decision making is pretty awful when it comes to shooting. That was kind of a microcosm of that. So, you know, they kind of had their go for the first half hour, results in us scoring twice, one of which is on a through ball, which again is kind of, representative of a team of Hart's level and quality trying to be front footed against us at Celtic Park is almost like a suicide mission if you don't get that early goal, right? So that's the gamble that they made. Had get Devlin score there, does it change the game? Maybe, do they change tactics, that kind of thing. But yeah, from the first half hour on, then they were a combination of playing deeper and we were imposing ourselves on them. And even within that context, they were still like, they weren't all that well organized and they were kind of, chasing us around, so to speak. Which again, when you got better players, that's usually not a smart thing to do against an opponent. So comfortable game, good performance. I'm not sure how much we can extrapolate into the weekend, which I think, again, could be a different situation. Overall, encouraging and to the point of now, man, I mean, guys getting fit. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest things is guys getting minutes and getting back into kind of, even if they're closer to 90, 95%, is hugely positive.
Yeah, the James Forrest one is something that we will discuss in just 1 minute when in relation to the derby coming up this weekend. But Alan, I didn't want to throw this question at James because it is very much a curveball because I wanted to talk about the game first. But when you were talking about the bench there, very notable that Palma is coming off the bench now as opposed to being the main starter on the wing for Celtic now that James Forrest is fit and Maeda is fit. Palma is very much, and we have Kuhn, Palma is very much dropping down that pecking order in the same way that Yang has. I mean, like, he was brought in sort of last minute. It never really looked like he was a planned signing. And it seems like the natural regression of where he was at seems to be, yeah, he is just about backup level at this point.
Yeah. With Palma, need to be delicate here.
he's a skilled guy, technically. Start with the positive.
Very good technical footballer. My understanding is he perhaps lacks in the following instructions department. And this may have something to do with his current status in the squad. Some player, I mean, we've seen it across the city, right? You know, players quite openly revolting because they're not playing in a they're playing the Platini role that they think they should in their heads. And with Palma, unfortunately, there's probably a little bit of that. He tends to do silly things, give the ball away in bad moments, choose wrong options, and basically not follow instruction really. So.
He's also not a good crosser of the ball for a tactical player. Like he is not a good crosser of the ball.
If you look at his data, he's not that far off the kind of similar profile to Jota. Really, I mean, he's a volume guy. Right? He bangs in a lot of crosses. Some of them come off. He takes a lot of shots. A few of them are quite good. You know, and Jota was kind of similar, but Jota's quality and decision making was probably just that little bit better. And he probably had a little bit more pace than Palma as well. That's the other thing that kind of holds him back. So I think he's a useful impact sub because he's the sort of player that you could come on and literally bang one in the top corner from nowhere. So in that sense, he's probably useful. But I do wonder what his long term future is at Celtic if he doesn't sort of adapt to the manager's wishes, shall we say? So yeah. But listen, a useful sort of maverick type player to bring off the bench for sure.
Yeah, I was going to add just one more part to that Jota comparison is Jota is probably just that bit better looking as well. You know, if you're... I know you don't care about that.
I know Luis Palma's mum and dad listen to this show, so I wouldn't want to say
Right, so, I mean, if we're taking the performance from the weekend, you never want to say, okay, this is how Celtic played against Hearts. so that means this is a way that they're going to play against Rangers this weekend, because that's just not the reality of football or derbies in general. But if we take the positivity of this weekend, add in the fact that the psychological aspects of the previous derbies were, you know, there was so much stacked against Celtic in previous derbies in terms of injuries, in terms of some decisions that went against them, and Rangers have still not been able to get past them. So if we now look at the difference that Celtic have this weekend going into the derby, Cal McGregor is fully fit. Hitati is probably has 80 minutes, maybe 85 minutes in him, as opposed to 60 minutes and dying on his feet in the last derby. James Forrest is fit and really, like, in really, really good form. And Kyogo is scoring again. So going into this derby weekend, James, I feel like this is probably the one where we said the previous ones were coin flips. I know derbies tend to be coin flips by nature, but if you're saying confidence-wise going into one, this is probably the one that I feel that Celtic do deserve the title of favourites going into it.
100%. And that's what has me irrationally concerned, meaning that, you know, again, the world I live in, when you're talking about, you know, financial markets and investing, is that usually the best time to do something in either direction, whether buying or selling, is when people are either, you know, screaming from the rooftops, "I'm a genius. Look how well I've done in this. This is the greatest thing ever. It's never going to go down again. You should probably be selling." And when they're vomiting all over themselves, they can't handle the pain that they're puking up the stock or the bond or the currency or the commodity, whatever, then that's usually the time to be buying. And my irrational, maybe, you know, I'm hoping it's irrational concern, is that, you know, we're at a point now where almost everything would tell you going into this game that this is a game we should win, right? Whether it's, even at Celtic Park, when you look at the recent history in derbies, pretty comfortable on an underlying performance basis, particularly if you back out any of the kind of dead rubber games at the end of the season when, you know, they haven't really meant anything. When you talk about pressure, you know, we kind of talked about that as a question heading into this. You know, I'd say so far, it looks like we're winning that battle, both at the player and the managerial level. You look at things like finishing in the derby matches. So again, that, to me, that's a proxy for, the ability of players to, perform under pressure. And if you look at the derby matches, again, outside of the dead rubbers, our finishing's been a good bit better than Rangers players in the last few seasons. So, yes, all of those things. But that's what's kind of got me concerned, because there is some room for mean reversion here. I'll give you a real quick example of this. So if you back out the two dead rubber matches when the games were the leagues were done, since Ange's arrival, so basically the past three seasons, it's nine games. And in those nine games, our post-shot XG is 9.62, but we've scored 20 goals, right? And their post-shot XG is 7.11, and they've scored 10 goals. So, and if you look at the underlying kind of just XG in those games, it's 9.37 to us, 8.3. in aggregate for them. So when we talk about coin flips, I and there aren't a lot of games where that's tilted one way or the other a lot, meaning that when you just get down to raw kind of chance creation and possession, and we really are talking fine margins in these games. And when you're talking about fine margins, it's finishing and it's keeper play. That often, and then, you know, big events like, you know, red cards and penalties. The qualitative stuff would suggest that we really should be confident. But like I said, that's overconfident. You get to a point of like arrogance, above and beyond the issue of bulletin board material, you know, when the manager says we're going to have fun, like if that's the kind of thing that you say when you're really, 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 really confident. And we, you know, you like confidence, but as far as a mosaic, kind of the broader situation, to me, that moves me to that area of uncomfortableness as far as being a contrarian and whether you get into that realm of, you know, it'd be different if we were blowing their doors off on underlying as well. You know what I mean? Like relative to the coin flip nature of these games and the other basic fundamentals as far as wage bills and all that other stuff. And, you know, we are still relatively close in the table. You know, so that's where my nerves come in. So I'm on the board with the rational part of, you know, the analysis of why this all should be a confident situation, but that's also why I'm nervous.
Yeah. That's also, you know, it's part of your Irishness, you know, we're supposed to be pessimistic enough. People. You're right. Not supposed to be an optimistic person. that was a very technical answer. I do want to, I want to continue on the technical nature for just one second before we get to the parts that I love, and that's the bits that you can't measure. If you look at derbies in general, so as James pointed out there, the underlying data is a lot closer than some of the rest of the data. But is there an argument to be made, and I think I asked you this before, that the derby is such a weird fixture and there's so many different variables that go on outside of the actual game itself that it's almost separate data in its own right to everything else that's going on, that you have to look at Celtic throughout the league, minus Rangers and what they're doing, and then Celtic versus Rangers just as a standalone fixture because of everything that goes on within it.
Well, yeah, that's a great point. And we didn't even rehearse this, but I thought I was going to raise that exact same point, actually. Just before I get into that, though, I don't disagree with James, but just a bit of extra context that I think is important, which is that, especially this season, when the games have been level, Celtic's XG is double Rangers, right? So the reason that the Rangers have got a relatively high XG relative to Celtic, even though Celtic have been winning, is game state. It's when they've been chasing the game and therefore, you know, throwing players forward, throwing the ball in the box, creating more chances. When the games are level, Celtic have got nearly double the XG of them, right? And that's a really important context. And Celtic, the games haven't been level for long. Celtic have been leading in all three, so for the majority of it. So, yeah, listen, it's very difficult using, let's for example, I was looking at StatsBomb data today to write an article for the Celtic Way, and I was basically doing a very simple team-by-team comparison. And really, if you do an exercise like that in a league like Scotland, the data's not useless, but it's very hard to actually, you know, to extract any real meaning from it. The reason being, as you exactly said, is both sides tend to dominate every other match and batter the opposition, and therefore have racked up, even if the styles of football are very different, which they are in this case, the end result is much the same in terms of attacking dominance and defensive performance. Even though you get to those places via very different styles of play, the actual numbers sort of aggregate up in a very similar way. So, you know, if you looked at the data, which is why, you know, you see Celtic attacking players and Rangers attacking players, midfielders, etc., all in the top 10, highest XG per game and all that sort of thing, which is why you have to look at quality, which is average XG per shot, average XA per assist. And that's why I focus on comparing Celtic players with each other, because to me that's a more realistic benchmark. So having said all that, you have to dig a little bit deep to find the differences between the teams. In a very simplistic way, a very simplistic summary of that is that Celtic has essentially got a more potent attack and the Rangers have got a slightly stiffer defence. The caveats to that are that I would say both of those things are trending in the opposite direction, in a good way for Celtic. Celtic's defence is getting stronger, their attack's getting weaker and their defence is getting weaker. And, you know, when you've got a front three of Fabio Silva, Dessus and Sterling, that'll kind of do that, right? And as Celtic's injury situation has cleared and Carter Vickers is back in the team, and you've got, you know, Taylor Scales, Carter Vickers, Johnson, whether we like it or not, it's now a pretty consistent lineup. You know, Hart, you can see, is giving everything of himself in his last few games before.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Retires. And if you look at, again, if you look at the goalkeeping metrics, which James references a lot on StatsBomb, Hart and Butland are pretty much the same now. There's very little between them. Butland probably makes more saves. It's that slight bit of agility, but across all of the goalkeeping metrics, and if you summarise it all by the on-ball value metric, they're almost, I think they've got the same on-ball value, or Hart's might even be slightly higher and higher now, because Butland's had a horrible last month. So even that, which was a real differentiator before, you know, Butland, you know, Hart, we talked about, was seemed to be struggling and very obviously declining, not off the cliff, but certainly declining. Butland was pretty solid. Now it's 50-50 in that department. With them losing Goldson, I know that their fans were on his back a lot. I seem to be on all of their players' backs at the moment, which is hilarious. But he's a big miss. He's easily their best defender. And it's not just his defending, it's his ability to play good long passes, which is fundamental to the way they play, because they are actually a very direct side. They do get the ball forward quickly, much more so than Celtic, probably about 50% more long balls than Celtic play. And Goldson is the best at that. You know, his distribution from the back is very good. So he's a massive miss for them. You know, Balogun was a quick athletic defender. He's 36 now, you know, so again, your age catches up with all of us. So, as James said, rationally, all of the performance factors, even the things that previously would have been differentiators around their defence, versus our attack, and our defence versus their attack, now, even in defending-wise, although they are better at defending set pieces, there's not a lot in it. There's not a lot in the goalkeeping. The one thing that they do have more success on the counter attack, which is a slight worry for us. But that's relative to Celtic. Probably don't, because Celtic have more of the ball, they're counter attacking less. So even that's, I don't think it's a flag that's that meaningful, to be honest with you. I think the most meaningful thing is the fitness and the form of the players, the strength of the relative squads at this point in time due to injury and other factors. I mean, you know, if Lundstrom's negotiating a new contract with another club, to what extent is he willing to test his hamstring by absolutely, you know, going flat out to chase a ball back? You know, that kind of thing. They're human beings at the end of the day, right? Same with Barisic. So all those factors, I do take James's point, but there's a certain calmness and I would say authority and confidence about Celtic. I think, despite what James said about the numbers on the pitch, I get the sense that the Celtic players that are actually there on the pitch playing the game feel that they are by far the better side. They feel that they're by far better players. And that, at the end of the day, is probably crucial, actually, when it comes down to it. It's just a feeling. It's not, you know, Celtic are kind of ahead by most of the kind of expected points models. Add in the impact of Honest mistakes, Celtic probably should be about 6 or 7 points clear at this stage in the season anyway, which is, you know, would be a decent difference. And the league would probably be pretty much done.
Well, you kind of touched on the non-technical side that I was going to bring up anyway. And I suppose there's two players in particular that I want to touch on here. James Forrest is definitely one of them. We will touch on him. But you mentioned Joe Hart there. And I mean, nobody has any proof of this. This is just like something that I'm witnessing with my own eyes. And I get the feeling that it is happening as we enter the final few games of the season. And that is, James, that Joe Hart is, this is his career. This is his legacy. And you definitely do get the vibe off him that he is going, he's giving like absolutely all guns blazing for these final few games. And not that he doesn't do that all the time, but there was a few games against Hearts where you can see almost like the stature, the way that he carried himself into it, the way he wasn't as quick to make the decision to go down to ground. He stood his ground. He was bigger. He's been in the last couple of weeks in particular, he's been more authoritarian when it came to like coming for crosses, coming for punches, coming off his line and showing his dominance. And then obviously after the game, you had him seeing, you know, singing with the fans or getting involved with the fans. That aspect of things is probably irrelevant. What's more relevant is probably the way he's carrying himself on the pitch. And you do get the vibe off him that this is his last dance. He wants to go out in high, and the concentration levels might just be at a point now where, you know, he's peaking as much as he can peak now. He's peaking as much as he can, which is always good.
Yeah, I would say that the shot stopping, understandably, always gets the main headlines and attention of people. But to your point, Enda, what the numbers suggest, and again, just from my eye test and looking at things too, is that the big difference maker. I mean, his shot stopping has been okay. It's you know, kind of been what he's been most of the time, which is around expected or, you know, kind of deviating around that. Some good patches, some bad patches, but generally around expected. It's actually been his non-shot stopping where, since the turn of the year, he has dramatically improved. Now some of that's, you know, there's always issues with sample size, but that, you know, to me, I've been talking about this for the last few weeks, is that to his credit, I mean, the decision making, so it's not just that he's coming off his line, he's making good decisions when he's doing it. So he's within the context of what his current athleticism is, he's making good decisions, right? So he's not going to get the distance, that's that extra yard or two to go out and punch, but that line where he's making the decision to do it and when not, and the effectiveness of when he's doing it, coming for crosses. You know, I did a thread on the decision making he had on the 1v1, which was pretty good relative to I forget who the other keeper was that made a, you know, probably a really bad decision as far as what, you know, when to come out and when not to, and do you do a spread or do you do a, you know, the technique of a keeper and how they go about their shot stopping. So, yeah, I think those parts of it, the kind of between the ears part, is where I think Hart has been, you know, tremendous since the turn of the year. And to his credit, and what Alan said is that's where Butland has actually fallen off a cliff. Like, he has been atrocious in that part of keeper play. His shot stopping's come down some, but probably come down to closer to where Hart was and is. It's the decision making and between the years. And again, this comes back to these issues of pressure and some of these qualitative things that were, you know, somewhat of an uncertainty heading into this kind of stretch run. So, you know, again, all of this is, you know, you get into one game, it's a derby, you know, probably the biggest one in, you know, more than a decade. You know, it's been quite a long time since we've had this late of a season game where the league's literally at stake. So, you know, again, all the trends are heading in the right direction, but you know, everyone's just one split second away of madness away from a Craig Gordon ninja kick, whether it's Butlin or Hart, right? So, yeah, this is, again, this is another one of those things that I was mentioning, and the trend has clearly been in our favor. So it's a reason to be confident heading into the weekend. But that's, again, why I'm nervous.
Sorry, I do have to say, I think the, oh, it's a derby, anything can happen, is a total fallacy. These games are usually won by the form team, right? Honestly, they are. You go back, and as James alluded to, some of the dead rubber games have had odd results, but when the heat is on, the better team, you know, generally wins these games. You know, they won the games during, you know, the COVID season. They were the better team, there's no doubt about that. And we generally won the games either side of that. and if you go back through, it is the case. You know, Lisbon Lions used to beat them pretty regularly, and during the 90s we didn't win many. You know, it's like, you know, generally it's the form and fitness of the players that matters, and the form team will generally come out on top in these games.
Well, and that's, so the other thing, back to what Alan said on games, that I got some numbers, I put some stuff together. So out of the 11 games, the 11 derbies since Andrews' arrival in the league, we've scored first 8 times. So that's been hugely important, obviously. And, you know, a lot of them, you know, you've got a 5th-minute goal, 21st-minute goal, 8th-minute goal, 5th-minute goal, 26th-minute goal, 47th-minute goal, 25th-minute goal, and 1st-minute goal, which obviously was just the recent. So, yeah, and as I've been saying this season, I mean, we've got Kyogo. Right. I mean, he's of that extra level of tier of not only technical ability, he's a smart player. He makes good decisions generally on average. And he's just able to do things that, you know, no one else on the pitch can, because he's just that level of quality. So, yeah, again, another side of this is, you know, if we get ahead, if we score first, I mean, it's going to be hugely important. I mean, it's obviously always the case, but particularly given the circumstances here, you know, the first 10, 15, 20 minutes, and if one of the teams scores, I think, you know, could be like a tectonic shift potentially of how it could play out.
I cannot wait personally to see Clement's meltdown if Celtic win this game. That's one thing it's bringing me optimism going into the weekend, is just thinking about how big his meltdown is going to be, how quickly he will morph into Mickey Beale over the course of the weekend if Celtic win this at 12 on a Saturday.
There's no kind of resigned disappointment with.
No, there's no in between
with Clement, is there? He goes straight from sort of relatively calm to just like nuclear. That's the only two settings I think the guy has.
Yeah, what's been amazing about like the last couple of years has been like the amount of revisionism most people have to do around Pedro is just hilarious. It's just like he just seems like the most normal one out of them all now, which is quite astounding. Alan, just to finish up, we have Kyogo, but we also have our best winger, as Brendan Rodgers titled him in March of this year. And I think when he said that, most people were saying, oh, that's just Brendan Rodgers being Brendan Rodgers, saying that James Forrest is our best winger. But by God, he has been proven correct.
Yeah, and listen, it's a bit like Liam Scales. It's a double-edged thing. You know, you're pleased for him. It's great. Aren't they doing well, etc. Versus, why are we here? It's like, you know, last year, James Forrest, objectively by any measure, was the fifth best winger at the club. You know, it wasn't. You know, that's not being unfair to him. That was just obvious, and that's how he was in, that was his status within the squad under Postecoglou. And now here we are. You know, grateful for the relative composure, calmness, decision making that he brings relative to the other wingers, because. You know, as much as Jota was talk about him being a risk taker and a volume guy, he did make a lot of great decisions, and he obviously, because of his innate quality, executed a lot of good stuff, double figures for goals and assists, no danger. you know, you, with Palmer and Yang in particular, and possibly even Kuhn, you can go games without a good decision, right? You know, they're just, it can be objectively terrible for games at a stretch, and then you get some occasional brilliance. Whereas with Forrest, perhaps the brilliance is very, very occasional, but so is the number of bad decisions. I mean, modern wingers are more like your Kuhn, your Palmers, your Yangs. People want unpredictability and chaos in the final third a lot of the time, and that's what those guys are there to do. But you have to take with that a lot of bad stuff as well. With Forrest, you don't get a lot of rubbish. You get a lot of pretty calm, measured play. You know, square passes back. If that is the best option, you don't get a lot of risk, particularly put into the game. But he's an experienced player, and you know, he's not fazed by playing at Hearts and having to win the game or playing at Ibrox or whatever. He doesn't, you know, none of those things are a stretch for him or is going to knock him off his game. So he just brings that measure of, as I say, a measure of calm to things. And I think what's going to be interesting is whether from a balanced perspective, Rodgers feels that, okay, if I play Forrest, I need a bit of chaos on the other side, or whether actually, you know, if Maeda is fit enough to last 70, 80 minutes, do you put Forrest back on his favoured right position and have Maeda on the left? But then you've not got a lot of magic there. You know, you've not got a lot of unpredictability. It could be just, it could be a little bit lacking in creativity from the wide area. So I think that's the big selection decision that Rodgers has got, whether to pitch Maeda in, whether to switch Forrest to the right, whether to play Kuhn in the right anyway, and then do you play Maeda or Forrest? I think that's the big area of unknown, really. I mean, I think just from a form perspective, I would put him up Forrest and Maeda on the wings, but I can see that might reduce the creativity and the risk the attacking positive risk might be reduced somewhat by doing that. So I'm kind of not convinced myself on that one.
I probably tend to agree with you in terms of Maeda coming in for Kuhn as opposed to Forrest. One of the reasons for that is probably that I think Maeda frightens the life out of Travnir. Like I think he just can't handle him.
Yeah,
he just doesn't know how to handle him defensively or when he presses him. So I think that's good, and he pins him in nicely. I think the one problem is then that you run into with James Forrest and Maeda is that if you're playing Maeda on the left so that he's on Tavernier, you're playing James Forrest on the right, and maybe he gets in Johnston's way on the overlap. Maybe he's trying to take up the space that Johnston wants to take around the side. So the balance of that is probably difficult. But yeah, in terms of form, you're definitely going Forrest Maeda, but it's a tricky one, James.
Well, and it gets the, you know, kind of the relative balance of what Rodgers has said about Forrest. This is the game where it's going to come into question more. I mean, in that it's off ball. It's, you know, he's lost a half step. He's not quite as quick as he used to be. So all of those things aren't really that big of a deal against, you know, 10 teams in the league for the most part. And we saw, I mean, he looked fine against Hearts. I mean, he looked like, you know, what he is, but more one of the higher quality players on the pitch in that game. Even against somebody like Barisic, you know, if it's Ridvan, I don't know where his status is. I mean, I know he was back in their squad last weekend and played some minutes. So that's the other part of this. When we look at the opposition here, they've got a lot of questions too, right? Is Sima going to be back? Is Ridvan going to be back? You know, Ridvan's, you know, he's not a world beater, but he sure is quick, right? So relative to this iteration of Forrest, you know, if you've got Ridvan speed and quickness overlapping versus this version of Forrest versus Kuhn as an alternative, and his probably being pacier and quicker at this stage, higher risk profile, as Alan's saying, less reliable, right? So it's there's a lot of pluses and minuses here that make it, I think, a difficult call. This is one of those situations where I don't think on an ex ante basis, I mean, going into it, I don't think there's a right or wrong here. I mean, I think it's, you're kind of just making a decision and hoping it's the right one. And then, you know, again, hoping that once the game starts to play out that you make the adjustments required. This goes back to my pet peeve of, you know, not subbing in the first half and all these other things. I mean, when you've got these kind of, you know, a lot of uncertainty in some of these aspects of this game, and not being able to know what Rangers selection is going to be because of availability of their players, you know, it's impossible for us to have a, the same for them too, by the way. So there's no way to have a rigid game plan coming into the game. So you're going to have to make adjustments probably. And the speed with which you make those, I think, could be of utmost importance. So yeah, I am militantly agnostic on, I see significant, you know, reasonable pluses and minuses, regardless of whatever mix. I think that probably the lowest hanging fruit is you play Maeda if he can, just because of what he offers. Relative to, and most importantly, keeping Tavernier as annoyed and shackled as much in going forward. As possible.
Yeah, but also like I've convinced myself that Maeda could be fine on the right wing as well, because like I low key love Barisic, because he's actually quite good technically, and if you look at his weaknesses, like 1v1, he's pretty okay. So that would, again, that Akun is a 1v1 player. That's where he has a strength. So, but one major weakness for Barisic is sometimes he forgets he's on a football pitch, and he just like the guys behind him can just like ghost in and get a goal. So that would be a plus for Forrest coming at the back post, or Maeda coming at the back post for crosses, as we've seen before, where Barisic just, he lost Abada like three times in a game. Abada got two goals in it. So like, yeah, if it's Barisic, I think Maeda's no brainer, either to have Forrest in that wing or to have Maeda in that wing. But yeah, we'll wait and see. That's pretty much all we have time for on this week's show, because as most people watching, I'm doing this in a wee dark box, so I'm hidden away on my lunch break. So I gotta head off and get back to work. So, annoying question time before we finish up. We're at 43 and a half minutes on the clock. I'll give you to 45 to come up with your predictions for the game.
I'll go first. I mean, the way these have been trending in recent times, I suspect both teams will score. I mean, in that I don't think either team is good enough defensively that, you know, it's likely to, I mean, we can hope for it, but, so I'll say 2-1 Celtic. Nervy 2-1.
In terms of options here, you know, there is an option that Celtic could absolutely blow them away, right? Not as lightly, I don't think, because we just don't seem to be able to play consistently for 45 minutes to remind 90. and there is a possibility. I think if they to win, I think really bizarre things have to happen, which, you know, with Willie Collum is always a possibility.
He is the man for that job.
He's the man for absolute.
Let's not start that conversation.
Just weirdness happening, and I think that I think on a footballing basis, Celtic are the stronger team. All the environmental factors, everything's really in their favour in that sense. So, but you know. I could see us again going 2-0 up and then 2-1 and then kind of hanging on a little bit, because that seems to be the way these games go. So that was what was in my mind before James said his 2-1, but yeah, 2-1 or even a bit of a scrappy 1-0 actually. But yeah, I'm hoping for a 3 or 4.
Listen, we can all hope for that. I'm going to go with a 3-1, but it's going to be a late third goal, maybe an Adameda goal off the bench. It would be a nice way to finish
such
off.
Such a homer.
I know. Yeah, I know. All right. That's where we will leave the show for this week. Thanks again to everybody who watches and listens. If you are listening, be sure to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment underneath. And we'll be back again next week to review what is hopefully going to be Celtic more or less winning the league this weekend against Rangers. Until then, which I do it. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.